Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we need to have but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday, Elizabeth. Glad to see you. Where are we off to today?
Today we are going home, Brad.
All right.
In a lot of different ways we are going to go home, metaphorically, physically, actually. I want to start off by talking about our hometown. Well, that's not fair. Our close-to-home theater program, PCPA, down in Santa Maria. That didn't go as well as I thought it would, but we'll come back around. But I went down and saw their latest production this weekend on Sunday, Every Brilliant Thing. And it's another one of those live performance experiences that I've had that I wanted to come in and make sure everybody took the time to go down and see this show. It's just beautiful. And it was fun because I had friends that came to visit for the last 5 days. And I will say, 5 days is a long friend visit, you know, the old story of like fish and house guests. But I will say that we had the greatest time because, one, they were easy to be with, but also they'd never been to this part of California. And so it's so much fun to like show people what you love about the place that you live, about your home. And also the weather was cooperative, which was nice, but they were so enthusiastic about everything. We rode the bike trail in Morro Bay and went to Taco Temple, which was fabulous, and walked along the harbor, and then we rode Bob Jones and out to the pier, and we went downtown and had dinner at Novo and then walked around. I got a really cool new necklace from the Zen Shack. It was like things that I don't generally do very often, but to be able to show someone this place, it reminds me how much I love our home and I love being in this area of the Central Coast, and how, even though I wasn't born and raised here, my husband, I've been here for 45 years now, so I guess I don't remember any time that I wasn't a resident of the Central Coast. But I do have that very strong pull that when we're away for any period of time, that sense of longing to be here is really, really deep. And there's always that moment where you come around the corner, you know, heading from San Luis Obispo south, and you come around the corner at Shell Beach. And for me, that's my deep breath. I know I'm almost here kind of feeling. But I just generally was feeling the love for everything that makes Central California our home, my family's home, and also to be able to share PCPA and their beautiful productions on a regular basis was just such a joy. And I loved it so much that I actually invited the star of Every Brilliant Thing, Emily Trask, to join us on the air this afternoon. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I just want to make sure that you fill the severance in this weekend, because your last performance are coming up, correct?
Absolutely. Our last show is this Sunday at 1:30. So we've got a show on Friday, two on Saturday, and one on Sunday.
And why don't you talk a little bit about Every Brilliant Thing? And it's, I will say this, it's a one person show, so you probably have a lot to say about why you wanted to do this show and why it's special.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for being a just incredible audience and for inviting me on the show. I've been a fan for a while, so it's nice to finally connect. This play was described, I think, by The Guardian in London as the funniest play you'll ever see about depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually seen it a couple times, and both times I've been deeply moved by it and recognized it as the kind of theater and the kind of art that gets me out of bed in the morning as an artist.
Mm.
It's it handles the difficult subject matter of depression and sort of family depression and sort of handed down trauma, but it deals with it in an incredibly human and very funny way that brings in the audience. I get to hand out 63 items at the start of the show from a list that the main character has started to create when they were seven, because their mother is sad and ends up in the hospital because she's she can't find anything worth living for.
Mm-hmm.
So as a seven-year-old, the narrator starts making a list of all the brilliant things in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as the narrator grows up, that list changes and matures, and it goes, you know, it goes from ice cream and water fights to watching someone watching your favorite film,
mm-hmm.
To more mature and deep things. So it's really a journey and kind of a coming of age play, but it also obviously deals with the issues and topic of mental health, which is one that I think is just imperative that we talk about, and that is part of our public discourse because it's so often silenced.
I agree. And I really appreciated that you have representatives from Transitions Mental Health available. I don't know if that's after every show to talk about mental health and to normalize it and to make it a conversation. Or is that just on the Sunday show that I was at?
The Sunday talkbacks are hosting representatives from Transitions Mental Health Association. They're professionals.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other shows, we have resources in the lobby right there as you're coming out of the show. And those resources are from Transitions Mental Health, as well as the Allen Hancock College Health Center and Mental Health Services. They're great folks over there. And all Allen Hancock College students actually get 10 free sessions with a psychologist when you're a student. A lot of students don't even know that they get that. So trying to get that word out. And then also partnering with a great local organization called Knowing You Matter.
And
so those resources are there after every show.
And I really appreciate kind of the theme of the show built. Well, I also want to say that it is tender and hilarious, and watching you navigate, because you are interacting with the audience. But I will side note for people who are thinking, oh, I don't want to have to do anything at the theater. That's, you don't have to participate. I'll calm you there, you know, but if you are wanting to interact, that it was so seamless. And the guests that I brought with me to the show knew nothing about it. I kept her completely in the dark. And so when it was over, she thought you had done just a stand-up of your life story and just were kind of going with the flow of whoever was in the audience. So you blend it so beautifully and naturally that it feels like it's, well, it has to be different almost every time because you are interacting with the audience.
Well, that is a beautiful compliment from your friend. Please tell them thank you. The greatest compliment that you can get as an actor is to have somebody say, it didn't seem like you were acting.
Yes, exactly.
So it's great because the script has built in places where you can personalize it for your area and yourself. And although it's someone else's story, ultimately it's something that resonates with me deeply personally. And like you said, it's different every performance because the audience is different every performance. And like that, it feels like an acting exercise on steroids. All you can do is be present. And play with who's willing to play with you. So.
And there's two other pieces, you know, one for your own mental health. It's such a great thing to be in a place of flow where you're so focused on the art and interacting with the audience. I would imagine that while you're doing this, it's a giant kind of escape into the restfulness of your being, you know, because there's no room for any other angst to happen, but being there present.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I feel like it's a kind of moving meditation in a way.
Yes, I can
see that.
You know,
you have to, obviously, sometimes outside thoughts will come crashing in and you have to just say, thank you, not now.
And back in the moment.
And Yeah, back in the moment. So it really feels like a gift in that way. But because this show is so beautifully crafted, the subject matter and the adrenaline usually doesn't hit me until about 2 hours after the show. And right. then I'm like eating everything in the house and, you know,
trying to come back
having
in.
A little bit of a come down. Yeah.
Well, as an audience member, it definitely was an escape experience for me because of the interactiveness of it. You can't completely tune out because things are happening around you. I just really can't say enough about what a fabulous experience it is. Every brilliant thing. It's at PCPA. This weekend's the last weekend. Friday night, two shows Saturday, and the Sunday matinee at 1:30. Tickets are, how do people find you at PCPA? And if they're not familiar, PCPA is in Santa Maria at Allen Hancock College. But how do they find mm-hmm. tickets, Emily?
So it's you can go to PCPA.org is probably the easiest place to get tickets online. But if you want to call our box office, let me just get that number for you right away. Just a second. I'm pulling it up here.
I didn't warn you.
And the box office is 805-922-8313. So that's 805-922-8313. And it's pcpa.org if you want to get tickets on the website. It's funny that phone number, I was like, you know, I've spent the last few months memorizing some big numbers, so that phone number would be a pretty easy one to have in my memory. But at this point, I don't think there's room for any more numbers in there.
You'll be seeing numbers forever. Yeah. Well, people will have to come to understand the reference to that. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every brilliant thing mm-hmm. at PCPA. Emily has kindly offered two tickets for a listener who is available. Is it for any show this weekend?
Any show this weekend, yes, absolutely.
So if you're available Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, Brad, if you're ready, we'll take the fifth caller. It's 805-781-3875. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to see every brilliant thing at PCPA this weekend, last shows Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. So, Emily, thank you so much for calling in. We'll get that phone number and name of the person and get it to you if that's okay. But I know you've got to get back to class because you're not only an actor, but you're also an instructor at PCPA.
I know. It keeps me very honest. I have to practice what I preach. And like I said, this show is unlike anything I've done before. It is, it's a sort of acting exercise on steroids. And I think it's really fun and really uplifting and brings the community together in a really cool way. So
that's fantastic.
Thanks for featuring us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I can't wait to come down and see Frozen in December. So we'll have everyone back to talk about that as well. But until then, break a leg this weekend. Thank you for calling. Thank you for offering the tickets. I think we had a caller already who is interested. 805-781-3875. I'll get that information to you. Thank you for joining me today, Emily. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And that was Emily Trask, actor and educator from PCPA, kind of kicking us off this afternoon on our theme, kind of a roundabout theme about home, being home, home again. And my guest for the rest of the hour is Jack Dupuy from Cuesta College, here to talk about their work as a member of the Slow Tenants Unit at Union, advocating for tenant protection in the city of San Luis Obispo. And we're going to kind of dive in and find out what is the state of housing in San Luis Obispo, especially around rental housing, and how can people get involved or help to make housing more accessible for more people. We're also going to open up the phone lines to get your feelings about what's going on in the housing market here in San Luis Obispo, so the rental market, and how we can make it feel like home here for everyone. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation after the show by giving me, sending me an email. I was going to give you my phone number. by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or leave me a message on our Instagram or Facebook page. I'm happy to answer there as well. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our show. Wherever it is you find your podcast, search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you'll be able to listen to our shows at your convenience. And if you leave a review, we can share the show with others as well, and I would much appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break, come back, start our conversation with Jack right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road, and although this way stringing us along, just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Settle down.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Thanks again to Emily Trask from PCPA for giving us tickets to hand out. I never get to do something like that. Who's going to be seeing Every Brilliant Thing this weekend?
Well, our lucky caller was Kathy from Pismo. She picked herself a pair of those tickets and is really looking forward to this show.
I am so excited. Thank you, Kathy, for listening and calling in. And Brad, I'm sure, has all your info. We'll get it to Emily.
Sure do.
Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're kind of switching gears, maybe moving over a couple steps, but I have in the studio Jack Depew. long conversation after the show about name pronunciations. Jack, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Elizabeth.
So now that we've had a chance to kind of sit together for a few minutes, there's 1,000 directions I want to go. But let's start off with kind of why we wanted to have this conversation. From your role as a member of the Slow Tenants Union, which I'm not familiar with. So why don't you start off talking about the organization and what they do?
Okay, absolutely. Yes. So I'm actually going to tell you the story of how I found the Tenants Union.
Perfect.
The Slow Tenants Union has a lot of really great information for renters in our city, in our county. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, I work at Cuesta College. I am on the support services side. I don't teach in the classroom. I'm one of the staff that supports our students. And a big population that I support.
Your role is director.
Temporarily.
Director. I want to own that.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Yes. And so a big population of the students that I support through our Basic Needs Center are experiencing houselessness or housing instability. And so I'm not originally from this county. So I made a point when I moved here of looking around for the resources that were accessible. And I'm very lucky. I know about 211 and things like that. I've lived in big cities that have really strong support networks. And we're very lucky in this county. We do have a strong support network, but the county is much smaller and students don't necessarily know about the resources that are out there. So I try to concentrate things in the office and find what I can. So I found a flyer for the Slow Tenants Union. And it was bilingual, and I thought to myself, amazing. We have English and Spanish resources for our students who speak English and or Spanish. And so I went to one of the meetings just to get a little bit more of a feel kind of for what was out there. I met a lot of familiar faces from other advocacy work that I do in the county. It's a really strong group of people that folks can go to with questions about, you know, whether or not their landlord has the right to evict them on a certain timeline, or whether or not their landlord has the responsibility to fix something that might be broken on the property. And I wanted to talk with you today because I also have experienced houselessness in this county, and it really takes a toll on people. And I know it for myself, and I see it for the students. And so having these resources is so helpful. But just having the conversation is the place to start, because so many people are afraid to ask for help or to say that they need help. And they don't get into the meeting rooms where they could get their help because they don't know that they're happening.
Right, so, because so were you already working at Cuesta College in the Student Engagement Center when you found out about the tenants union?
Yes and no. So long story. So the way that our departments are structured is a whole other conversation that we could have. But I did work at Cuesta College, yes, when I found out about the tenants union. And I was looking primarily for the students because having experienced that for myself and not really having found any resources that would be helpful for my situation, I wanted to know what existed. So when I moved here, I moved, like I mentioned, I'm not from San Luis. And
we'll
I moved
still
here.
Accept you. It's okay.
Thank you. You know, it means a lot. I moved here for a job, right? Okay. So I was coming to the county with a salary. I mean, it's a real adult job. It has healthcare and everything. And so
you probably expected that you'd be able to come and rent something fairly easily, right?
That's exactly what I expected because I thought, well, my credit score is really good. That number on the paper that they give me is not low. And so how hard could it be?
Right.
And I was coming from LA, coming from San Diego. You really do. You go see a few apartments. You put in five or six applications. Someone calls you. It takes maybe a week. Whether or not the apartment's ready right then for moving, different story.
But they do exist.
But
there,
they exist.
There is a rental inventory.
Exactly.
Right.
And so here, I thought, no problem. And I was shown a lot of houses that, you know, just my professional background, I happen to have worked with appliances. So I would go see houses and there wouldn't be a fridge or the range hood over the stove wouldn't be pulling high enough to actually get gas out of the kitchen while you cook. And I was like, wow, that seems unsafe and irresponsible, right? And so I'm being shown kind of these properties that, like, I'm an adult, you know, I need to be able to use my kitchen. I need a door that locks, right? I need my place to work because I'm going to live here and I work. I can't have a bunch of things that don't work because I work.
Exactly.
And so, you know, it was really unexpected for me because I had a salary. I was established more or less, right? And so I'm looking for these places. And I'm living in my car while this is happening. I'm going to work.
Is this the first time you've ever had to do something like that? It must have been shocking.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, we all went through the pandemic. We all did different things and had different, you know, accommodations for that experience. But it really was the first time that I couldn't have done something different if I wanted to, unless I changed something like quit my job. And I wasn't going to quit my job, right? Like, I would have had to quit my job, move home to my parents. I have
and
a master's
start all
degree.
Over again.
You know,
like, and start all over.
That's not where I was trying to be in my life. And so I was like, okay, well, how long could this possibly take?
So how long did it take?
Several weeks, you know, a month. And that's not that bad. And again, like, I'm very privileged because I have the job, right? And I know.
And a car.
And a car. And I know that I can ask for help. So I would be asking for help. Like, where do I go? You know, and I'd get told, like, oh, go to Capslow, go to Haslow. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't qualify, right? Because I have a job. You know, I don't qualify because I have a job. I don't need to take a bed from someone that doesn't have a car. And I'm really not in the position that people see houselessness as, right? Or like what supports are needed. And so when I found the tenants union, I was so relieved because so many of the students that I talk to are at risk of winding up in the position that I'm in. And at Cuesta, our population is not, you know, 19-year-olds who could move back in with their parents fairly easily. It's also a lot of working adults who are coming back to school to change careers, to get a pay raise, to take care of the kids that they already have, not kids that they're planning for. You know, my students bring their children to my office. I have a kids corner set up, right? And so having those people sitting at my desk and telling me, like, I don't know what to do. I got this note from my landlord. I'm going to end up in my car with my kids, and knowing how hard it is to live in your car and show up to work clean every day, right? Like, where do you shower? Well, I shower at the pool. Can they leave their kids unattended while they shower at the pool? No, they can't, you know? And so, like, the things that I had, they don't have access to, right? And So finding the tenants union and saying, like, I have a resource, I have somewhere that I can send you for information to connect you with, you know, just the knowledge of what exists. But then also that opened up the whole conversation for me of what doesn't exist in this county, right? We don't have a lot of data on our housing. We know about how many people are renters. It's about 62% of the county. But we don't have...
Is that high for most counties?
You know... It sounds high, doesn't it?
Okay, I didn't know if it was. I didn't know if it was like because it sounds very high.
It is, and I mean, it's just a high percentage, right? It's just if 62% of people are doing something, anything, that's more than half, right? Like that's a majority for sure. And it is kind of mind-boggling to me that we don't have like a rental registry. Like the city doesn't even know
how many properties there are.
Yeah, like. They're supposed to get business licenses, you know, but we've all seen Craigslist. We all know there's a lot of folks with that back room that they rent out, you know, and all that kind of thing is just it's like it's unregulated. There's no data. How are we supposed to know really what the state of things on the ground is if we don't have that information, you know, and then even if people do get to the meeting where they could get help, right? Where does that help like run into just the lack of support, you know, that there's so much in our state. I'm very lucky and grateful to be a Californian. I was not born one. I'm from Washington State. And it's very nice to learn, right? Well, in California, we have the Tenants Protection Act. Okay, there's a few loopholes in the Tenants Protection Act, and they actually doesn't cover a lot of the properties in San Luis Obispo. So they don't have to follow it, you know, and so like, we could close those, we could get a rental registry. There are all these things that exist in other places in California that we don't have here, which is crazy to me with how high our proportion of tenants is, of renters, and how, you know, frankly, like harrowing it is to be in an insecure position. And then also in, you know, my role to work with people who are facing that down and knowing how it feels and saying like, well, I can help you this much,
right,
but past that,
limit.
Nothing exists.
Right. We can be concerned.
Right.
We can hold your story, but to actually be able to provide something past that, like protections and more rentals. And I also find it interesting that I would think I would have had this bias or this thought as well, that most of the renters are all college students, and Cal Poly continues to let college students in, so it's just more and more renters. But interestingly, our rental market is retirees who are on a fixed income, middle-aged people retiring, moving down here, young families that are just starting out, and young professionals that are moving here to start their careers with a job, and a portion is students, but it's all of those other people that are trying to find housing and want to find home, because that's the theme for today, is how important that feeling of home is. So is what's coming up, like, is the tenants union actively in front of the city council, or like what are the actions?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think all the city councilors know my name now because I go to public comment so much. But we live in a city where we have a really responsive city council, in my experience, which is amazing. And so they're going to be actually holding a forum next week from today on the 28th to discuss housing in the city. And that is the culmination of a lot of work between the city and the tenants union, but it's also really just the next step in the conversation and in getting some data, getting some information, and deciding on a really clear path forward, hopefully, because we've been having the conversation, right? And we know what we need, and we know what would help. And so moving that forward is really important next week.
So is the forum open to anyone?
It is, yes. Absolutely. Please come.
Where is it going to be?
City Hall.
And from when to when?
I believe it starts at 5. They haven't released the agenda yet, and so I can't make any promises. But our agenda item, I believe, is 2nd, so maybe 6 o'clock. Which is great. You know, most of us got off at 5. So
and time to get there and be a part of it. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Jack DePue, a member of the SLO Tenants Union, advocating for tenant protection in the city of San Luis Obispo. We're also wanting to talk about the whole idea of home and having a place that feels secure and safe, and how important it is to your mental health and well-being to be able to feel safe and rested in your life, and how for 62% of our population just here alone in San Luis Obispo, they have kind of that renter insecurity that I don't think many people actually consider how tenuous it is to be a renter, that you're always at the whim of the landlords. So that's our conversation today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Our phone lines will be open at 805-781-3875 to share your thoughts. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
The Golden State is burning crimson red. All the smoke is swirling in circles round my head. Gather up all my things and pack them all away. Running for my life through the hazy day. Oh my, it's high time. Back it up, we got to leave now. And I wonder if we'll make it home again. But the rain never came to soak the redwood trees. The outlaw winds are blowing.
Beautiful song, isn't this? Brothers Comatose. It's our album of the week. The song is called Home Again. Look at me drawing in the music portion of our station into my show.
It is a good one, and I'm going to be featuring I might feature this song, if not another track from it, on my program this week, Across the Tracks, which you can hear, of course, Thursday nights from 8 to 10.
A little self-promotion
there.
That's fine with me. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And my guest today is Jack DePue. And they have kindly come in and offered to share their perspective on our housing. If I say crisis, I tend to think that people's ears shut down, because when it's a crisis, it feels overwhelming and there's nothing we can do. So if it works, I'd like to say our housing dilemma here on the Central Coast, our housing issue that we need to grapple with, because that feels like there are things and steps that we can take maybe to work with it. And Jack, you were talking about the next Tuesday, the 28th, there's going to be a forum that's open to the public, sponsored by the city council. We think at 5 or 6, but the agenda is not yet out, to discuss some of the housing solutions that the Slow Tenants Unit is kind of proposing. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those solutions that you're hoping for would make things life easier for renters?
Absolutely, yeah. And you're so right. It's not necessarily a crisis. It's a crisis in our individual lives when we lose our housing. But as a city and as a community, it's really an opportunity to engage with, you know, what has worked in the past, what's not working anymore, what can we do, and what lessons have we learned from other places in the state? Because we have got some great experience coming to the table. We have got some folks on the city side that have experience in other cities that have some of the things that the Slow Tenants Union are talking about, as well as other rental protections. And so some of the things that we think would work really well here, first of all, we really just need information, right? Trying to make any kind of decision, and I knew this before, but oh boy, am I learning it in management. Having to make any decision without any kind of information is so difficult, and you will get nowhere, right? And so not having a rental registry of just like what properties are rentals.
What's the hesitation to having a registry?
You know, I'm not really sure. I really don't know. And maybe that's because I've only lived here for a few years, and maybe it's just because I see the benefits for everybody, right? Of like, if we know how many properties are rentals in the city, and, you know, which ones are local and which ones are, you know, I mean, the city could ask for all kinds of data. Different cities ask for different things. Just the concept of it is so important to have some data and some information and going forward with like, I mean, just information. I hate to just keep repeating
just
the word, but, you know, it's a great foundation for some of the other things, right? Like I already mentioned, closing the loopholes in the Tenant Protection Act, right? Because in California, we do have some requirements and we do have some protections that just happen to not apply to a lot of the properties in San Luis. But it is stipulated in that act that cities are allowed to implement more stringent measures or come into compliance even if they were accidentally left out or if the loophole kind of exempted them unintentionally, which is what has happened to us, right? So the city has lots of room to make really good decisions on behalf of their renting population, which is high, as we mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, personally, this is a huge one for me, just having protection from what we call no-fault evictions, right? Like when your landlord is just like, oh, well, you know, it's not that you did anything and it's not necessarily that anything is wrong. It's that, you know, there's some construction that needs to be done, right? Depending on what that is, depending on whether that's a renovation, depending on how good your landlord is, that could be a real reason for a family to have to find a different place to live, but it also might not be. And unfortunately, we see a lot that, like, you know, it's a rent eviction, right? Is like a phrase that's pretty well known that we say that it needs to be renovated, but then actually we just paint it and put it back on the market with a $500 higher rent than what you were paying, right? Mm-hmm. And so having protections against things like that, and again, there's a lot of room for interpretation with what that could look like, but just that's something that I see a lot, right, or that is brought up to me a lot, is like, well, I don't really know whether this is acceptable. And unfortunately, unless it's one of the few legal protections that exist throughout the state, no matter what, it gets gray fast, right? And so saying like, no, you have these rights, you have this protection, and even just further resources in the city and in the county for folks who are renters to be able to go and say, hey, I'm not really sure if this is an okay thing, because a lot of people are afraid to even ask questions because housing is so difficult to find in this county. It's expensive. If you have a landlord who's even kind of okay, you want to stay right where you are. And so sometimes then, you know, maybe the landlord doesn't know, maybe the you know, communication was blurry, whatever it is, people will be afraid to say, hey, is this okay? Or ask questions of their landlord and say like, hey, I'm not sure about that, right? And so then who else do they ask? And if Slow Tenants Union isn't already on their Instagram, add it to your Instagram. But, yes. You know, it's definitely like it can get confusing and uncertain, and then people just don't ask, and then they might lose their housing.
And kind of keeping in the theme of today about the home and mental health, mm-hmm. There's so much research that supports this idea that having a safe place to be mm-hmm. each evening is so critical to mental health, you know. And so I want to focus a bit on that and what you see. My guest today is Jack DePue, and we're talking about housing and how we define home. Our phone lines are open if you have some thoughts about our housing challenges. 805-781-3875 is our number. Working in the mental health field, there's always this kind of bumping up against each other, the theory of biological mental illness and situational mental illness. And through all the research that exists, there is a small, small genetic component to mental health crises. And it exists in most of us, some people a little bit more than others. But what really triggers our mental health issues are the situational pieces. What happens in our home, what happens with our family of origin, what happens, you know, if we experience some sort of trauma or natural disaster. You know, many things can lead to a mental health crisis. But having a home that feels safe and inviting is foundational to kind of that nurturing, that nesting of our mental health. And in your position as the director of student engagement at Cuesta, I'm sure you've seen firsthand the mental health stressors that come with trying to be a student or a returning student and feeling the insecurity of maybe losing your housing. And what does that do to everything, not just the housing piece, but everything in your life?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was working with a student a few days ago who, you know, comes into my office I just lost my housing. And I'm like, oh no, right? Because I really hope you make it in before that, because we can help, right? Mm-hmm. But if you don't, what now?
Because you have the domino effect of that, right?
Exactly. And so now we have the kind of spiraling needs, right? Of like, okay, I lost my housing. So not only do I not have a place to sleep and store my belongings and keep my computer, which I have to have for school, right? All these things. But also, I don't have Wi-Fi. How do I keep up on my classes? I don't have a shower. Do I just go to work smelling like this? You know, and I remember that. I remember being in that position and working at a college, right? Like, you want to set a good example for these people who are trying to better themselves and trying to come back and learn. You don't want to be the person who has to say like, oh, I'm sorry that I don't smell great today. I didn't get a shower. I sleep in my car, right? Like, so I remember that stress. And I always feel for the students that are experiencing it or who are, you know, at risk of experiencing it. But it happens throughout our county, right? It's not just being a student, but, you know, a young professional who hasn't found a place to live yet, me when I moved here, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to make a good impression on your boss when you didn't get any sleep because you are not really sure if where you parked was like safe or if the cops were going to knock on your window all night. And also you couldn't shower because you don't know where the showers are in the county yet, right? Like, I know that hypothetically I could shower in a gym. Which gyms have showers? Is that all of them? I don't know, right?
And also, as you mentioned earlier, if you're a parent with children, you don't move that easily through
right.
places. You can't just march into, you know, the gym or to the community pool. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not free because mm-hmm. even if you mention you can go to the gym or the pool to swim, the pool to shower, it's expensive. And that level of fear and anxiety when it hangs over us, whatever mm-hmm. it is, whenever we have something daunting hanging over us, it's hard to concentrate. So you can't keep up with your classes. School isn't free. And so there is that if you fall behind, you know, I feel it inside of me now as we talk about it. And then what about food and feeding your family mm-hmm. if you've lost your housing? And if you get evicted, what happens to all of your food and all of your stuff? Where does it go?
Right. And if you're lucky, you can get
seriously.
A storage unit, is right? Depending on the timeline, depending on how much money you have. You know, a lot of different things can happen and none of them are fun, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the anxiety that you mentioned, that's real because it makes people make bad decisions mm-hmm. because they're in a position where they're desperate and they're anxious and they're not thinking and they haven't slept. And I'm saying all of these days, but that's
yeah.
me, right? Like, I was in that position. And so knowing that I'm making a decision and not knowing whether it's a good one or not and just being like, I don't know, this is what I feel like I have to do right now. And then looking up 2 hours later and being like, am I late to work because I decided to shower? Yes. Okay, this is also not a good look. Mm-hmm. But it was the only decision that I had. And I'm very lucky I didn't lose my job in that month period while I was looking for housing. And I was able to figure out fairly quickly, like, okay, which cafes have Wi-Fi and don't mind if I sit there for 4 hours, even though I only ordered one thing. Mm-hmm. And where is the cheapest place to shower? And, you know, where can I park my car so that I'm not in danger or being kept up all night by the police trying to sweep, right? And so, like, I've been in those situations of the anxiety and the poor decisions and things spiral, right? And even, you know, so we're talking about rental protections, right? And keeping people out of that cycle, because yes. once you get in it, it's almost impossible to break. And so we want to keep people in the housing that they have.
And I would think also that if evictions are on your, I don't know if you have to like fill out your tenant application, and even if the eviction is not your fault, then that starts to weigh on it as well. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875 as we talk about the concept of home and what that looks like if you're a renter and don't have the securities or the protections of home ownership. Donna, thank you for taking the time to call.
Hi, Elizabeth, and hi, Jack. I first of all want to thank both of you for having this conversation. And of course, I always want to thank Jack for the work they do with the Slow Tenants Union. My name is Donna Hare Price. I'm actually one of the founders of the Slow Tenants Union. And I just want to say we came about because we started talking to our neighbors about what things are bothering them and where they're having difficulty in life. In fact, just kind of as you said, Elizabeth, we went neighbor to neighbor and door to door talking about how people are faring with a focus on mental health, because as you know, mental health and well-being impacts all areas of our life. And what came up over and over again were the conditions of rental properties. Mm-hmm. And I'm personally going to talk about the women that we spoke to who talked about not having a deadbolt on their door or a light in a hallway that was dark and truth be told, in daylight, even ominous. And we know that this impacts how people feel safe and protected in their own home. In addition to that, I really want to highlight that evictions and rent evictions disproportionately impact women, and especially single mothers and women and mothers of color. And having a child actually increases your risk of evictions. And all we want to do here in SLO is ensure every person has access to safe, affordable, and secure housing so that it will improve their mental health and physical well-being. Because as you talked about, Elizabeth, we live in a beautiful place, mm-hmm. and folks should be able to live here without being stressed out. Thank you.
Oh, Donna, thank you for taking the time to call. And, you know, I'm just curious, it seems like it's simple things that are being asked for, you know, deadbolts and lighting and, you know, a stove that works, things that seem to be simple, and yet they go unnoticed or recognized or cared for. And is that what you're looking for in kind of closing loopholes and registries for landlords?
Right. Well, I think, you know, obviously what you said, we're asking for really basic things. Mm-hmm. It isn't a big ask for the city. Mm-hmm. We're not reaching, you know, we're not stretching really hard for things that we know that could protect tenants even more. But the kind of that basic health and safety is really important and really doable. And then the Tenant Protection Act could be closed so more protections are offered. Literally, with kind of a swipe of a pen. So again, another easy lift for the city. So we're starting, we've been advocating for over 2 years for these items. And thankfully Jackson, you know, by our side and been part of it. But again, we just want to start with the kind of the easiest and move forward. We want to protect everyone.
Donna, thank you for having the gusto and the inspiration to start the SLO Tenants Union and even taking the time to start talking to neighbors and to find out what's going on in their lives to even get here. I admire that. So thank you for your hard work.
Well, thank you. And the only way we're going to fix the system and protect all of us is if we do it together. We change the world one relationship at a time. And that's what we all, I think, want to do here on this call.
I'll buy that t-shirt when you make it, Donna.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for calling. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Barry, thank you for taking the time to call. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, thank you, Elizabeth, for having this really important conversation. And thank you, Jack, for having the bravery to go on the radio and talk to people about it. My concern is that there is such a power imbalance between landlords and tenants because the market doesn't really work here. A lot of people say, well, we should just let the market work. But because demand will always outstrip supply here, tenants are really at a disadvantage, and many, many tenants are afraid to ask for their basic rights, to advocate for their basic rights. Tenants have a right to live in a house with a roof that doesn't leak, mm-hmm. with a house that's not infested with vermin. But so often when we go out and talk to renters, we find out that they're living under atrocious conditions because they're afraid to ask the landlord because they can get evicted just for complaining.
Yeah.
And so we really need the city to be a little bit more proactive in protecting tenants from landlord retaliation and making sure that tenants know what their rights are and that they have access to legal support when they need legal support if they're being evicted, and those kinds of things. And I would love to ask Jack what kinds of stories you hear from the students that you're working with at Cuesta, who we understand are not just young kids straight out of high school, but a wide range of different types of demographic groups. What kinds of stories are you hearing about evictions?
And Barry, yeah, we'll go to Jack to get a couple more stories. But Barry, thank you for taking the time to call and sending a note in. I appreciate you supporting the show and the station. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Side note before you tell the story, I just want to throw this out because I know we're talking about tenants' rights and, you know, wanting to make sure that the housing that is offered is safe, because that just feels so fundamental. And it opens like the crack to the door, the Pandora's box of landlords and how, you know, they feel that they're misused or, you know, people rent the property that's supposed to have two people and has six. That's a whole nother piece of it. And I just kind of want to focus a little, make sure that we're not ignoring that those are all conversations and issues, but to kind of focus on, to me, this basic piece that if people are renting, 62% of our population, we want people to feel comfortable and safe, because when we interact with people in the public, when they've had rest and they have food and they feel safe, we're all better human beings. So it would behoove us, right? If you want to lift the quality of life for your community, make sure everyone in the community has those basic needs met, because then we all are operating at a better level. If we're talking about mental health care, those are the foundational mental health care things we should care about as a city. You know, leaving aside like the landlords and their issues and how much things cost, just as a community to think about how do we all do better when we have enough food, we have a place to sleep, and we feel cared for. And with those three basic things, all of our mental health improves. Secondly, I would love Cuesta to consider building dorms if they're going to, right? There's a lot of property there, and to help with that housing piece that can be controlled. And then in our last minute or so together, give me a positive story about a student that you've worked with in the Center for Student Engagement at Cuesta. Tell me a win you've had.
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, Elizabeth, that's not really a fair question. and secondly, So, you know, one thing about community colleges is that they don't have dorms. We never do.
Exactly.
The state of California is not.
Do they prevent it?
No. Oh. But we don't see that happening in the entire state. We are not an outlier in that we don't. And so, you know, that's not something that I would anticipate seeing. We do have other solutions. We do have an emergency housing program. The Basic Needs Center offers assistance with paying rent, especially if students receive pay or quit notices.
And is that just for Cuesta students then? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to know.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, and so...
Does Poly offer things like that? Do you happen to know?
I am sure that they do. They have their own basic needs approach, and I know that they are working to build dorms to keep up with their enrollment population. As a university, they do offer dorm living. You know, all of my students are successes. I would never choose one because... That's what makes it an unfair question.
Okay,
they are all successes. The fact that they come to class every day, dealing with the barriers that they're dealing with, my students who are using the emergency housing program, who are sleeping in their cars, who are afraid that they're going to lose their housing, who are trying to figure out how to deal with talking to their landlord about the black mold that's hurting their children, they still show up to class. And they persevere every day. And it's difficult. I can see the toll that it takes on them. I can't pick one to be proud of. I'm proud of all of them.
That's fair. How about being proud of yourself?
We'll work on the Catholicism.
I mean, because you...
Maybe someday. Maybe someday, Elizabeth.
Well, that'll be another conversation.
Okay. I'll come back.
Because I'm listening to your, you know, brief story that I got to hear of, you know, moving to this area 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. 3 years. Had found a job on your own, come to this place. That takes a lot of courage in itself to kind of show up in a community and say, I'm going to be vested here. And people will spend 10, 15, 20 years and never really interact. But you've come into the community and gotten involved with the SO Tenants Union. You said there's other mm-hmm. groups and organizations that you're very involved in and that you've become kind of a voice and an active participant. And if everyone in the county made the effort to join one group that they supported, how much more we'd flourish as yeah. as a county. I want to give you a moment to, you know, applaud yourself and your willingness to jump in and be not just living here, but being an active part of the community.
Well, thank you. I really believe in building the future that we want to live in every day. I don't want to live in a place where people continue to experience the insecurity and the fear and the uncertainty and the unsafe living conditions. You know, mm-hmm. we're really asking for the basics as the tenant union. And everything I do is just, I want the world to be better. And I'm here and I want it, so I should go for it. and getting involved is part of that.
Jack DePew has been my guest today. We are talking about the SLO Tenants Union and the forum that's going to happen Tuesday,
October 28th.
I'm in the wrong month.
Yeah.
October 28th. Thank you. SLO City Council, look for that agenda. Come and have your voice be heard. And again, if we all speak out about one thing, everyone tends to thrive. I look forward to our next conversation, Jack.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You can find me at Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, on Facebook, Instagram. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can podcast our show. Please do leave a review. Send it to your friends. And as always, thank you. Thank you for tuning in and being a part of Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Oh, when shadows fall and trees whisper day is ending, my thoughts are ever wending home. Crickets call, my heart is forever yearning, someday to be returning, oh home. When the hills conceal the setting sun, begin a peeping one by one. And oh, night covers all, and though fortune may forsake me, my dreams will ever take me. Take me.